by virtue of how nonprofits operate in a capitalist society, they're entrepreneurial.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Going Deep with Aaron Watson. Over the last few months, we have been interviewing some of the most prevalent and prominent movers and shakers, community builders of the city of Pittsburgh, names like Audrey Rousseau, Kenny Chen, Ryan O'Shea, and more. And today's guest, Ryan Gaiman, deserves a spot squarely in the middle of that list. His company, Citizen City, is working with nonprofits and social enterprises in the city of Pittsburgh to make serious change in the communities around the city and nationwide. He calls Pittsburgh the Silicon Valley of social enterprises, and in today's episode, you will find out exactly why he believes in that. If you've been loving these interviews with Pittsburgh movers and shakers, then you absolutely have to get a ticket for the January 27th Going Deep Summit at the Kelly Strayhorn Theater in East Liberty. I've set up a fantastic full day of speakers who are also working to shape the future of the city and beyond, thought leaders and innovators like Dan Bull, Adam Harridan, Leah Lizarondo, and many, many more. Tickets are going fast. We've already surpassed 50% of the tickets sold with just a little more than 3 weeks to go before the day of the event. You need to head over to goingdeepwithaaron.com/event to get your tickets, and I hope to see you there. But in the meantime, please, please enjoy this conversation with Ryan Gaiman.
You're listening to Going Deep with Aaron Watson.
So Ryan, thank you so much for coming on my podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yet again, we are in the Ascender offices, which is the home to many young, vibrant companies within Pittsburgh, yours included, which is Citizen City.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it makes sense just to start off with telling the audience what Citizen City is and what it's all about.
Sure. So Citizen City is one of the Pittsburgh or Mid-Atlantic region's only social impact business development firms. And in really short terms, what that means is we help people grow their businesses, make money, and try to do good in the world. Whether you're a nonprofit or an innovative nonprofit to a for-profit entity, startup, large corporation that is trying to balance the pursuit for profit and a pursuit for some kind of social, economic, or environmental impact, those businesses have unique challenges when they're trying to balance those two seemingly opposed things at the same time. And what we do as Citizen City is on a spectrum of services that on one end is strategy and advice and research to think through how an organization can grow their business, get more money, but also increase some impact indicators that they've set out to direct business development with things like sales, mergers and acquisitions, and cultivating partnerships, structuring deals for various entities. And we've been around since 2015 informally, 2016 formally, and excited for a big year in 2018.
Absolutely. And one of the manifestations of that work is the Social Venture Partners, which is a incubator accelerator specifically for social ventures, hence the name. Can you talk a little bit more about what you're doing there and maybe get into some of the specific challenges or learnings for the nonprofits and enterprises that you're supporting in their nascent stages?
Yeah. So Social Venture Partners Pittsburgh is part of a larger international network called Social Venture Partners. It's been around in Pittsburgh since around 2001. And what it is the bridge between socially conscious private sector professionals and the most innovative nonprofits in the Pittsburgh region. As a couple of interesting factoids, SVP's Full Circle Impact Accelerator is the only accelerator in the region that is specifically dedicated to accelerating nonprofits, and one of only a handful. I think there are three that we've found in the United States that are investing time, energy, resources, finances into accelerating nonprofits exclusively. The other interesting thing about social venture partners as an accelerator is that there are more philanthropic dollars invested per capita in Pittsburgh than any other city in the world. And I think there's now like 2,500 to 3,000 nonprofits in Allegheny County and surrounding counties. So we have been told that we're operating in this Silicon Valley of nonprofits. And there's a lot of really amazing innovation, creative solutions that are being developed by nonprofit organizations that is scalable. Reason being is that they are on the front lines of social issues oftentimes, and who better to know how to address in new ways, classic challenges, whether it's food in access, whether it's housing, trauma-informed care, whatever it is, these nonprofits know it. And the value of an accelerator, as we have felt now since we've been involved with SVP since 2016 as a client, nonprofits should have access to accelerators. And what comes out from them looks a lot like what comes out from an accelerator program for for-profits, which is an organization that is come in at an inflection point of scale. We put them through a 14-week intensive program. Each of them get a 5 coaches. The coaches are SVP partners. These are philanthropists that are dissatisfied with conventional philanthropy. They don't just want to give a check and walk away. They want to play this kind of hands-on VC role. So they contribute to SVP as engaged philanthropists to be these coaches in the program. So in addition to going through the accelerator curriculum, the nonprofits get this all this private sector knowledge that's coming from our coaches in the program. And they leave it coming through that inflection point, hopefully on an upswing of seeing their impact growing. And we've had some really fun organizations, some amazing organizations from the last cohort where we just had our pitch event for our fall cohort. Each program, like many other accelerators, ends in a pitch event. Our most recent one was at Google. Google Pittsburgh's headquarters. For example, two of the nonprofits that won a check from our marquee sponsor for the event, Next Tier Bank, were Ujima Collective and Prototype PGH. Ujima Collective's been around in Pittsburgh for about a decade, and what Lakeisha and Ujima do are break down barriers that are holding female Africana entrepreneurs and makers from the market. And she does that through a retail space. She does that through amazing internal lending programs, like really what the heart of entrepreneurship in Pittsburgh embodied in their organization and their nonprofit. They came to us because they, like many other retailers, are having a hard time with their brick and mortar operation. And so what we help them pivot into is e-commerce in this sort of next generation of retail, what Lakeisha now calls Ujima 2.0 or 3.0, which looks a lot like experiential pop-ups mixed with their e-commerce. So, this isn't a private sector company that's doing this. This is a local nonprofit. And you juxtapose their work with Prototype PGH, which started after the inauguration of President Trump, and the Sprout Fund in Pittsburgh was doing a bunch of micro grants, and they got a micro grant. Two women from TechShop were looking around TechShop as they were working and recognizing that the space was filled with too many folks who look like me, white guys, and that there was a real need to make this maker economy more inclusive and to be a more welcoming space, particularly for women and minorities. And what sort of stemmed out from that and recognizing the power of not just making the maker movement more inclusive, but by doing so, they're actually helping women access new and more impactful careers by having that community that they create. And what they actually do is have a feminist-focused makerspace, which we think is the first in the country. And they're quickly becoming these knowledge leaders traveling around the country, partnering with folks like Innovation Works in Pittsburgh. They've spoke at Google conferences, and they're really on the cutting edge of how we use the maker movement as a tool to break down a lot of gender inequalities that we see in the country. Again, innovative nonprofit. Those are the folks who come into the Social Venture Partners Accelerator, the Full Circle Impact Accelerator. And there's your second question about what we learn from them. I mean, I think the single-handed most important thing to learn from the nonprofit side of the accelerator is sort of what I began my response with, which we need to pay attention to nonprofit organizations and the innovations, the creative solutions that they're creating, because they are on the front lines. It's harder, I think, to sort of create a quote unquote social enterprise without really diving into the challenge. And diving into the challenge can take months, years. And entrepreneurs, you know, they're restless. They don't necessarily want to take that time. So a way that we can lower that reaction rate to getting really powerful, impact-driven solutions is by doing a better job of listening and investing in nonprofits. And as I said, with a region that has so many nonprofit organizations, Pittsburgh is and should continue to be a hub for these impact-driven solutions, whether it's in the nonprofit world or the for-profit world.
So you used an interesting analogy of comparing Pittsburgh and nonprofits to perhaps Silicon Valley and startups.
Right.
And I think that's excellent branding, by the way. But one of the kind of stories that come out of Silicon Valley is all these young companies need to find scale before the large companies that they might be competing with find the innovation that they've created. And in the world of nonprofits, it's honestly just an area that I'm not as fluent in. And over the course of the interviews that I've done for this show, I can look all the way back to one of the, this is actually episode 15 with Ian Neumeier, and he was talking about the challenges of a sustainable nonprofit versus the motto of just where's the next round of fundraising and always being in the mode of fundraising and how you make that distinction. And I think that that is a really important lesson for, you know, you could even define someone who starts their own nonprofit as entrepreneurial. It's a very similar gene. It's a very similar motive or catalyst that they may be facing, but maybe a slightly more nuanced model or just different model that they need to find that success. So I don't know if there's other examples that you can give specifically or in broad terms what you're seeing talking with so many of these organizations that some people are doing right, and not to necessarily calling one out, but this is kind of the wrong model that we try to steer people away from.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a fantastic point, and it's actually phase two of the accelerator. So the first thing I have to say is that the entrepreneurial gene is, in my opinion, inherent to the nonprofit industry. I don't really care if you are a 50-year-old sort of institution or you are a startup, quote-unquote, nonprofit organization that's been around for less than a year. By virtue of how nonprofits operate in a capitalist society, they're entrepreneurial, right? And so that's why they're fun to work with, and that's why our SVP partners, those next generations, many of them are entrepreneurs. Our accelerator model attracts entrepreneurs who have built their businesses, and they want to provide that private sector business acumen to scale nonprofits. And it's that. Finally, maybe putting a mirror in our faces and getting a little uncomfortable about how close the private sector entrepreneurship is and managing a successful nonprofit organization and impactful nonprofit are. So with phase two, we try to look at that, and it's called connecting impact-driven nonprofit success and financial sustainability. And our theory is that a successful nonprofit looks at itself in some ways as a nonprofit business, but ultimately as a solution. So many of the nonprofits in the region, if you would ask them, what problem do you solve? It's a really difficult question for a lot of folks in the nonprofit industry to answer, at least we found. Now, juxtapose that with folks who are starting a company. The first thing that they get on their slide deck at a presentation is, this is the problem. You know, this is the opportunity. This is our solution. What we start to cultivate is, and before I move on from that, the reason that is because as nonprofits are first started legally, and what they're bound by is a mission, which is intended to be a rudder that helps steer the ship to make sure that it stays in track with the mission that it was inherently created to follow, right? Now, this mission can become an anchor rather than a rudder for a ship, and people just keep coming back to it. Well, because these mission statements are usually like 42 words long, or they don't actually say this is the problem, right? They try to almost create a solution statement up front. And so what we take are mission-based organizations, nonprofit organizations and try to convert their thinking into impact-driven nonprofit businesses. So from day one, we get them thinking, what is the problem you solve? And the quicker that you can articulate that problem and get people's heads shaking in the room, they understand, oh, okay, I understand why this organization exists. And then they quickly have to move on to understanding what their solution is. In the private sector, we'd call this a product or a service. In the nonprofit world, they would call it a service or a program. And they have to be able to articulate the impact of that solution. And think of this like a unique value proposition. Why is your solution the most impactful thing, right? And here's where it gets really difficult for nonprofit organizations. If I'm a private sector company and I'm selling dish soap, right? I have to be able to articulate to you, the consumer or potential consumer, through marketing, various customer acquisition strategies, whatever. I have to be able to convince you that this is the best dish soap for your problem, which is your sticky dishes, right? The nonprofit world has more than one customer. For-profits have one customer that they often are trying to sell to, the consumer of the product, or one client, let's call it. Nonprofits are in a sticky situation because oftentimes they have two clients that they're in the middle of. One is the beneficiary client who they have to sell to. If you are providing a solution to meet someone's hunger needs, for example, you have to prove that you are the most impactful, most efficient solution for their problem. Otherwise, they're going to find another organization to go to that better meets their needs. Not only do you have to convince that beneficiary client, we call them, of your impact, you have to convince a funding client of your impact, because too often the person in the nonprofit industry that is the recipient of services, products, or programs is not the one that pays for it. Funding, often coming from foundations, donors, etc., are the ones who pay for it. So if a nonprofit almost has to do double work and sell or show its impact to not only those who are the recipients of its services, but those who are funding its services. And in order to do that, a nonprofit has to become intentional about how it's planning its impact, how it's measuring its impact, and how it's showing or communicating its impact to those two client bases. In a lot of ways, it sets up, you can imagine it as a design challenge where you're setting the organization up in the middle of the beneficiary client and the funding client, and that every story that they tell or everything that they track based on the programs should have a sort of runway to who they communicate that impact to. Foundations, they want to see the most impactful solutions for big challenges, big problems in our communities. And if a nonprofit can show that it is the most impactful solution to a problem, and that they can clearly articulate that problem and show how they're making a change to it, you are setting yourself up for that kind of investment. And we need to start getting nonprofits to think more as impact-driven entities. And not always just quantitatively measured impact, but qualitatively measured impact, so that they can go back to foundations to prove, to say, no, we are the best solution, you know, fund us, or to their donors or whoever it is that is funding it. So that is the biggest thing, that when we think about nonprofits and their issues with financial sustainability, it's often because we get into deep conversations around business models and all of this, but nonprofits are inherently founded on having an impact, and too many of them don't do enough to try to measure or understand their impact as organizations, and then be able to communicate that to the people who are receiving or paying.
And it's also a really interesting time. I don't know, I'm sure you're aware of the effective altruism movement, or even the organization itself that uses evidence to say, like, this is where your dollars would be best put to use, mm-hmm. and avoid these ones because they have too many administrative fees and what have you. So beyond just communicating that vision, really being on your game is more important than ever. The light is being shown on everyone, mm-hmm. and you can't avoid that type of valuation in everything that you're doing.
Yeah. And just to say something on that, because I'm not, I actually, I push back on the argument that nonprofits can't have and it's potentially unpopular, can have higher administrative costs. I mean, we even talk about it in our own work with social venture partners and our ability to partner with a nonprofit organization to operate, you know, the region's only accelerator. We're able to create fantastic efficiencies, and we dramatically lowered our administrative costs when we, or SVP's administrative costs when we began working with them in 2016. But I do think that there is a need for some organizations to put money into administrative costs if, and it's a big if those additional administrative costs have or result in higher impact outcomes that organization is set out for. So if a nonprofit organization needs to have a $50,000 marketing budget, and that marketing budget they can show has a direct result that they've octupled their impact, let them have that $50,000 marketing budget. They just have to be able to connect the dots. And too rarely, I think, or nonprofits are often prosecuted for or persecuted for having too big of administrative costs. But it's the sort of thing that we wouldn't blink an eye at in the for-profit world.
Well, like anything, if it's purely reduced to the statistics of something,
right,
you're going to miss the greater story. So definitely an important lesson there. This has been tremendously insightful. I know that people's wheels are going to be spinning. Even from the answers that you've given so far, it's very clear how oriented you are around the work of others and lifting other people up. But we got to dig a little bit more into your story.
Sure.
So I think a really great place to start would be how you ended up at the University of Pittsburgh.
Yeah. So one of the reasons why social venture partners, and I have a keen interest in sort of pushing the envelope on where philanthropy should head in thinking about what the next generation of philanthropy looks like, what next generation philanthropists look like in this millennial forward Gen Z generation, is that I myself am a product of philanthropy. So I'm originally from South Central Pennsylvania, rural south middle part of the state. I say I'm from Chambersburg, but I'm originally from Newburgh, which is 30 minutes outside of Chambersburg. I grew up about a 5-minute walk from a one-room Amish schoolhouse. And my access to the University of Pittsburgh came through two very generous philanthropists, Jerry and Marguerite Lenfest. Jerry and Marguerite are serial entrepreneurs. Their latest endeavor, which led them into being, usually they are in the top, they're usually like 48, 49, 50 of top 50 philanthropists in the United States, as they built a company and then sold it to a little known company you've probably heard of before called Comcast, and overnight made a couple $1 billion. And what they looked at was the majority of philanthropic dollars in the United States for education and access to things like higher education is funneled into urban and suburban areas. And there's a big gap in what is offered to rural communities. So Jerry and Marguerite tested a couple of things and ultimately landed on this Lenfest scholarship that I think when I was around, they selected 15 different school districts in rural South Central Pennsylvania. And they selected, I think, 12 of us my year and helped fund our college degrees wherever we wanted to go. And I think the other thing that sort of has changed how I think about philanthropy and or we can't just solve challenges with money. That's a big part of my thinking with SVP and many of our other clients, or just social issues in general, comes from the Lenfest experience. Wasn't just paying for my college. I also got a college advisor. His name is Roger Laheca. He's the dean of students at Columbia for years and years and years. And here I am, a kid from rural Pennsylvania, not knowing anything. Neither of my parents went to college. And now this guy who has worked with, you know, dozens of hundreds, thousands of some of our country's most amazing intellectuals, entrepreneurs, etc., is now confidant helping me get into college and then walk me through that college process. And so it was that access to social capital, access to knowledge capital, and to all the networks that came through Lenfest that was really one of the most powerful things for me to have. So it's important in all the things that I do that that it's not just about money. It's about giving people access to networks and being generous with those networks, infinitely generous with those networks, as my mentors and have been to me.
When you look at yourself in the mirror, and I'll acknowledge it so that you don't have to be in any way braggadocious. You're highly fluent, highly intelligent, well-connected, doing meaningful work. When you look at where you've gotten to, how do you measure the balance between, you could call it luck, or you could call it the kindness of others, versus an inherent quality that you have inside yourself?
luck. I mean, it's like, if I break it down by percentage, it's like 80% luck, 20% preparation. Yeah, there are a couple of wild stories. I mean, hindsight is like not even 20/20. It's like 15/15, right? It's so clear. I'm always very wary of these people who say, I did this, and then I did this, and then I did this, as if we can be very almost overly strategic with their lives. I've never found that to be a productive strategy or one that's realistic. And if I look back, there are several pivot points in my life where I was in the right spot at the right time. Sometimes by planning, sometimes by happenstance. And it's what you do in that moment of luck that's the most important. When I so I did my undergrad at the University of Pittsburgh. I went there initially to study neuroscience, because where I come from, medical doctors are the way that you climb the socioeconomic ladder. Quickly learned that I was not interested in biology and chemistry and the physical nature of the body, but was more interested in human behavior. So I ended up graduating with a degree in urban studies and anthropology. And after I graduated, I was asked by the dean of the Honors College at the University of Pittsburgh to found their Office of Academic Community Engagement, which was trying to connect the academics of the university, this brain trust of a university, to addressing social, economic, environmental issues in the region, in a way that's not as they had been doing previously, like going and picking up trash, right? And there were some pockets at the university that were doing this within specific departments, but it wasn't a sort of cross-disciplinary thing. And that experience kind of was this sort of amazing early on ignition point to be given the opportunity to sort of have that level of influence. And that experience, the manifestation of that experience, actually began like 6 years before that, when I was a freshman in college. And this is one of the most probably critical pivot points in my life, where I was still studying neuroscience, and I was going to watch a friend get a tattoo. She was on the same floor as me, and we were down by the bus stop waiting to go to the south side in Pittsburgh, where, you know, a bunch of tattoo shops. And she and I were waiting there with a couple of other friends, and then a guy who I randomly met at one of my early admissions days. The only reason I met him is because there was traffic coming into the city and I was late, so we got paired together and I saw him. I hadn't seen him since this early admissions day. And he said, "Oh, what are you doing?" And I said, I'm going to watch a friend get a tattoo. And he said, and I said, "What are you doing?" And he said, I'm going to learn about this organization that tutors Somali Bantu refugees." I didn't know where Somalia was or what the word Bantu even meant. And I was vaguely familiar with refugees coming, you know, fresh out of rural Pennsylvania into Pittsburgh.
But you knew tutoring.
But I knew tutoring. But I was ultimately sort of interested in difference and things that were very different than me. And that's one of those moments, that stupid luck of being on that sidewalk, and I describe it as falling as fast as you can forward. Just fall on opportunities, and you're either going to land on your hands and do a push-up, or you're going to land on your face and you'll learn about gravity, right? And so I went with, his name was Steven. I went with Steven to this first organizational meeting. It changed my life. And it got me deeply involved with social issues, refugee resettlement in Pittsburgh, which led me to travel to places like Tanzania, Ghana, to actually work in a Liberian refugee camp. Anyway, it was about being in that moment and having an opportunity of luck presented, or this luck opportunity presented, and making a choice. It still is your choice to either pursue or to not to pursue something, recognizing that you don't know what's behind the door, but fall fast on it. And so if I fast forward to when I was working at the university, I mean, in large part, it was my direct access and direct work in the community with trying to solve refugee resettlement issues inside Pittsburgh that led me ultimately to get in this amazing position right out of college at the University of Pittsburgh. I didn't have that as an intention coming into the university, and it's certainly not what I expected even a month before graduating from the University of Pittsburgh. But it goes to show that falling on opportunities can lead to really amazing things. And when I was advising students at the university, that was there were two things that I always preached. One was to fall fast and hard on opportunities that present themselves. And two was to create a board of advisors, which is just, you know, a way to try to articulate building out mentors. And that universities do, even my alma mater, and they know this, does a very poor job of cultivating an understanding of social capital, of a generosity, of sharing contacts and networks, and instead they still sort of push this notion that you can do it alone, and it's just such an archaic idea of individualism that I've tried to break in people for years.
Well, I think there's a lot of wisdom entrenched not only in the insights that you shared at the beginning of this episode, but also in your own story and your worldview. I think that people are going to walk away with a lot of wisdom from this episode. If they want to connect and learn more or just follow along with what you're doing, where can we point them towards?
So folks who want to learn more about Citizen City can go to citizencity.org. That's citizen, everything, individual citizen, C-I-T-I-Z-E-N, up to, you know, big city. .org, citizencity.org. And if they go to our website, in the top right corner, they'll see something called TWDG, which stands for the Weekly Dose of Good. Each week we handpick, curate a list of the Pittsburgh region's top social impact news, everything from events to opportunities, things like funding and professional development workshops, and then some of the most interesting impact-oriented hiring news. And that's a good way. It's free. It's a good way to get plugged into the impact scene in what I think should be the sort of impact capital of the country.
So a lot of people in Silicon Valley ring the bell for coming to San Francisco to find opportunity. Mm-hmm. I'm curious what your philosophy is, because we've got about maybe 40% of listeners in Pennsylvania, and then the rest are all over the place. What would you say directly to the people who are maybe nowhere near Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. and might not be here anytime soon? Would you encourage them to come? Would you encourage them to invest in their local community? How would you frame that?
Yeah, I would first encourage them to take 3 to 4 days and hang out in Pittsburgh. And if they want to know who to connect with, they can send me an email and tell me about what they're interested in. I can share some contacts with them. There's some really special stuff going on in the city right now. Part of it's because of our history of labor organizing, manufacturing, blue collar, the foundations. I mean, we are the city that built America. Detroit and a couple others might contest that, but I'll put the stake in the ground and say Pittsburgh. And because of that, there is a unique social consciousness that is pervasive, whether you're talking about real estate development, you're talking about co-working spaces, you're talking about fintech, you're talking about crypto, whatever it is. The community is something that's on people's minds around here, and I think that's unique. And I think there's an incredible opportunity for people who want to either develop an impact-oriented business for-profit enterprise, or work for a company that cares deeply about community, or they want to push the envelope with nonprofit organizations or you know, other entities, to come and check out Pittsburgh and to see if you want to make your mark on this city, because you can. It's small enough but big enough that you can do that. And I would love to sort of re-engage this conversation in 2 years, which I think is going to be the big tipping point for where we'll see Pittsburgh and folks from the sort of millennial forward generations are going to start packing the city.
Well, we will definitely do another episode in 2 years. And I have a few ideas. Maybe we can talk afterwards about people that are going to scale in and extend beyond Pittsburgh, despite this being their origination point. But at the end of each episode, we always like to give the mic to the guest one final time to issue an actual personal challenge for the audience. You kind of did already, but whatever you want to challenge the audience to do, now's your chance.
Yeah. Two quick ones. If you are if you are an entrepreneur, if you have a for-profit entity, if you're working for a corporation internally, I challenge you to think about how the core tenets of your company, of your organization, could be a part of a solution to a big challenge that's happening in your community. And that can look in a variety of ways. And anybody who's interested in figuring out how their business can be part of the solution, please reach out to us at Citizen City. It's what we thrive on. And then my second would be, selfishly with Social Venture Partners, that if you're in the Pittsburgh region and you want a hands-on role with your philanthropy or with your giving, and you want a really different experience where it's not just about playing a role in tackling the region's biggest challenges, but also connecting with other socially conscious private sector professionals, come and talk to us. We would love to bring more folks on. We have 42 coaches, 42 SVP partners right now, and we're hoping to get that number closer to 60 by the end of 2018.
Awesome. Well, all these links are going to be available. So if you want to learn more about Citizen City, Social Venture Partners, and Ryan, it'll be very easy to do so in the show notes. But Ryan, thank you so much for coming on the show, man.
Thank you.
We just went deep with Ryan Gaiman. Hope everyone out there has a fantastic day.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Going Deep with Aaron Watson. This was such a fun interview. I'm so thankful to Ryan for coming on the show and sharing a little bit of his wisdom, a little bit of his expertise with us. I'm so excited to see what Citizen City and Social Venture Partners have coming down the pipe. Please make sure that you hit that subscribe button and show up at the Going Deep Summit in a few weeks. And coming down the road, I would love it if there were any other big names in the city of Pittsburgh that have yet to come on this show. Please urge them to reach out to me, because I'd love to meet them, love to talk to them. We are really building a movement here. The last few months of engagement and just overall downloads of the podcast have been stupendous. I am humbled. I am floored by your attention, by your continued interest in the work that I'm doing. And I'm just going to continue working to create great episodes for you every Monday and Wednesday here on Going Deep with Aaron Watson.
Thanks for listening. Connect with Aaron on Twitter and Instagram at AaronWatson59.